Close your eyes and imagine what you'll look like 6 months from now. How's your hair look? The same? Now picture how your hair would look if you started using Hims. If you're picturing the same you as before, but with much thicker and fuller hair, you'd be correct. What can happen in 3 to 6 months? You could pick up a new hobby and get not that good at it yet. You could do about half of your New Year's resolution. You could learn a few songs on the piano or pick up bass guitar. Or you could start seeing thicker, fuller hair regrowth through Hims. Not bad for just 3 to 6 months. Men, if you're starting to notice your hair thinning when you look in the mirror, you're not alone. Life just gets busier and busier, and it can feel like there's not enough time in the day to do something about it. So, try Hims Hair Loss Solutions. You can avoid jumping through a bunch of frustrating hoops and get access to treatment without even leaving your home. Hims provides you with the convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients, like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, and they can help you get your confidence back too with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary based on studies on topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
What makes for a great vacation? Depends on who you ask. Are you looking to get away? Or bring everyone together? Do you want to get outside and play? Or see a play at the plate? Fortunately, however you operate, I'm the destination you've been looking for. The name's Missouri, but you can call me Mo. And I have just one question. What's your MO? Come see me at visitmo.com.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're here to continue our draft countdown series today with the interior defensive lineman position of need for the Ravens. Joining me to talk about those players is Jake Vogel. Jake, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good, Ken. How about yourself?
Doing great. Wish the Orioles were playing a little better, but that we are where we are right now. And the Ravens situation on the interior defensive line, it's not like it was entirely unexpected, but Michael Pierce officially announcing his retirement shaked up the defensive line, leaves the Ravens in need, certainly of a nose tackle. They're down to just really Travis Jones, of players who fit that traditional nose role. They have not yet re-signed Brent Urban this offseason. He could be back. He could also be pushed off by a draft pick, I think. Would you agree with that?
I definitely agree. I love Brent Urban as a player, and you know, everything that you kind of pick up from watching the Wired stuff that the Ravens do seems like a great fit in the locker room. This year feels like a super talented defensive line draft in general, and I could see the Ravens possibly double dipping there. And if they do that, I'm not sure that there's going to be that normal handshake deal for Brent Urban available unless, of course, there is an injury, which we never want, but it's the reality of football. There might be an injury that comes up in, you know, training camp, and maybe he would be able to stick at that point.
Yeah. I could see multiple paths to the roster for him. One would be the normal handshake agreement at the end of the camp that extends the roster, and they could carry six defensive linemen. Possible. That's probably less likely because that really cuts into your special teams players. I think they could put him on the practice squad this year, potentially. He is a player who would probably be amenable to that in terms of having a chance to play a little bit later on. And a last possibility is he just has a handshake to make a handshake agreement where they keep him on speed dial. They call him when he's needed, whenever that might be during the season. But certainly injury would be an easy route to see him playing more. The defensive line for the Ravens has been pretty good about not having severe injuries the last few years. Pierce was out for a few weeks this last year. Travis Jones has hobbled a little bit. You know, that's about as serious as it got. The previous year, five guys played every single snap. So really a remarkable feat. But anyway, what I think, if you look at the Ravens interior line, that they have the outstanding pass rush pairing of Jones and Madubuike, given the Ravens thinness at edge, and obviously those positions overlap in terms of some ability to replace. You have the likelihood, I think, they'll stay with two interior defensive linemen on most pass rush snaps. You in the same place on that?
Yes. The talent that they have along the interior plus the dearth of talent on the edge kind of creates that situation like you're talking about. It'd be difficult to kind of go back to the Wink Martindale ways and see a lot more race car package when we don't really have the edge rushers to do that right now. And you have the talent in Jones and Madubuike and, you know, potentially some other guys coming up. So we'll see.
Yeah. And in this, as you mentioned, we're getting to the end of the COVID bubble, which impacted the defensive line probably more than any other single group. A lot of defensive linemen took years off. And I think this is the draft. We're finally seeing that big push of defensive linemen come into the draft and be available and have, you know, some guys who just couldn't play in 2020 got their careers done finally in 2024 and are out there. It's a very, very talented group. In fact, we're just talking before the show, but it might be as many as 12, 13, or 14 guys we might see by the end of day two from this defensive line group. I have 11 guys that I think would be a fit for the Ravens within the top three rounds. That's how good this draft is. And that the Ravens, you know, one of the things we're going to talk about a little bit on this show is how they don't really need a three tech the way a lot of other teams need a three tech. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree completely. My ranking, as I talked to you pre-show, was a little bit more of your typical best player available who has the, you know, the top tier pass rushing traits. So our names are going to differ a little bit, but I mean, mine will be probably closer to what you're used to seeing just from a pure top, you know, 100 board, whatever. And yours are going to be a little bit more, you know, favoring the Ravens' specific needs at nose tackle when you're talking about a guy like Michael Pierce being gone.
Right. I would agree with that. I think that's the way this is going to shake out. All right. Well, let's go ahead and start off. The Ravens only made one defensive line pick in the last four drafts, which is incredible for a team that's consistently poached for defensive linemen. The Ravens, the only IDL selection they've made in the last four drafts is Travis Jones.
Yeah.
All right. All right, so you folks probably know if you've been listening to these shows, we go in a 10-to-1 format. Start us off with your number 10 guy, Zig.
So this name, Anais Peebles from Virginia Tech is my number 10, and there were so many guys in the same cluster for me. Like we were talking about pre-show of how many guys are just, you know, super talented and what that pool looks like after COVID. He could have been outside of my top 10 easily, but all of these guys, pretty much 10 onward, are borderline third round and up type players, in my opinion. He is a pretty standard size defensive lineman, which is a good thing, I'd say, unless you're looking specifically for this, you know, behemoth of a man like Michael Pierce. He's kind of going to fill multiple roles. He can play three tech. I think he can play some nose, and he can maybe kick out a little bit to the five, but he's not the tallest guy in the world. I thought he was just a darn good pass rusher. I thought what he was able to do in the run game was really nice as well. I mainly focused on a couple of games, one of which was really strong for him against Miami. You know, they were an interesting team in college football with Cam Ward this year. I was surprised at his mobility. Not Cam Ward. I already knew that, but what Peebles was able to do in terms of chasing him, getting after the quarterback, and really putting some moves on their interior offensive linemen. But yeah, I thought he had a strong bull rush. He had a really sweet spin move at the end of that game.
Yep.
Against their right guard to get a sack. It was almost instantaneous. It was really cool to see. A good penetrator versus the center. Honestly, if you just look at his frame and everything, you'd be surprised that he handles double teams pretty well. He did a good job against double teams on multiple occasions during the game. Has a good dip and swim move. He kind of put the right guard number 73 in a blender. So I'm glad I'm not doing the interior offensive line show. You guys already did that, but I wouldn't have the nicest things to say about Miami's line. Mm-hmm. But, you know, on the other end of it, I think that Peebles, you know, showed up and showed out, you know, being a player from the ACC and Virginia Tech, you know, they don't get a lot of run in the media and everything, but I thought he was a surprising player that had, you know, plenty of talent to maybe slide in the end of the third round, early fourth round is kind of where I see his value.
Okay. Value to the Ravens or value in general, you're saying?
Just in general. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Peebles is on my list at number 18. So that includes a fair number of honorable mentions in this defensive line class, which we'll get to later. There were some things I don't really think he's a great fit for the Ravens. He weighs 282 pounds or did at the combine or whatever testing he did. Might have been a pro day. Ran a 4.94. Yeah, that had to be combined because it's not starred in any way. He's 24 in September, so he's a little older with 4 years at Duke and a year at Virginia Tech. Probably, again, a COVID product that he's getting here a little bit late. His testing, you know, what I like about him is that he took every test. He did all the tests. A lot of players don't do tests. They're going to be bad at. And when I see a guy who comes in like a little bit below average in terms of percentile ranking in certain test groups, I still think it's good that he took the test, even if he came in at like the 37th percentile or something, because it would be higher if everybody had to test. And so that was something that I liked about him. You're going to hear two signature statistics that I have for every lineman here. And one of them is the stops to missed tackle ratio, which is 5.0-1 last year and 3.9-1 for his career. Career has a 14.4% missed tackle rate, which is high for a lineman. It would be one of my concerns. Is he going to be able to play the run, or is he just too small to play the run in the NFL? Don't see him as a guy who could move to nose. He did play 55% pass rush snaps in his career, which moves him in that high is kind of in the pass rush specialist category. Mm-hmm. That's what I would say he is in the NFL, and a good hand fighter, good leverage, very polished technique. You mentioned the spin move. That's one thing I noticed as well. Very high motor as a pass rusher. That spin move is very rare to see among interior defensive linemen. It's very uncommon. So I could see why that would stick out on tape for you. His snap count and his tackle productivity are both high. So one of the things is if you have just an average stops to miss tackle rate or a little bit above average, maybe I'd say, you want you're okay with each additional missed tackle because you're getting a requisite number of stops for it. But his tackle productivity is very high. So he could possibly be an early down three tech who could move into a bigger three tech role if something were to happen to Matabike. And that's something the Ravens need to be cognizant of and prepared to deal with, is having another guy who can rush the passer from that three tech spot if Matabike is gone. But otherwise, I think he's kind of blocked with the Ravens. I have him as a 4-5. Selection. Don't have any problem if the Ravens take a chance on them now. I just wouldn't go any higher than that in terms of value.
Yeah, I think that's completely fair. And like I mentioned, this is I'm more skewed towards pass rush. And you kind of mentioned you see him as a specialist at this point. Yeah, situational player. I think that lines up with what I was seeing in him as well. We just ranked him differently because we're, you know, we both want the same thing for the Ravens. I'm just maybe still always open to the idea of adding a pass rusher along the defensive line, as well as bringing in another two-gapping, you know, big body nose tackle to really help out.
But one of the things that I thought of when I did this is if the Ravens are as good as we think they'll be and they're leading in a lot of games, they're going to want to have a closeout pass rusher as well. Mm-hmm. And it's okay to have essentially two, three techs in there at the end of a football game where you're leading and you're just teeing off on the other team down after down. So for that purpose, you know, there's certainly value there. It's just the Ravens, I think they would be incredibly shorthanded if they went into the season without an early down nose.
Sure.
But I do look for, you know, how can they get more pass rush on the field? Mm-hmm. I'll go ahead to my number 10 guy. That's Jordan Phillips of Maryland. Did not expect that he would climb up into the top 10 on this, but there are good reasons for it, in my opinion. So 6'2", 312, 31.5-inch arms, 5'10", which is okay in terms of it's actually probably a little bit quick for his size, 40. Good jumps, 29 bench reps. He'll be 21 in June, so he's a younger guy, really young. A very average athletic profile. The only thing was an 8'19" 3-cone. Not sure what happened, but again, he tried everything, and that's good in my book in terms of his athletic profile. Here's the thing that really stands out about Jordan Phillips. His stops to missed tackle ratio is best in class career at 15.5-1. He's got a career 3.3% missed tackle rate. He made 59 out of 61 tackles in college. I'd like his productivity to be even higher, but the low missed tackles are terrific. He played 51% pass snaps, which is towards the direction of a more concentrated run defender, but still a kind of a normal range. He'd be a little smallish as the nose tackle, but you know he's got to make up for that with hand fighting and finishing tackles, which is certainly what he was able to do in college at two different stops. He did not have a PD at the line of scrimmage and 533 pass rush snaps. And he never have a college sack. So those two things are very bad. But on the other hand, you're looking at a player who is bigger than Kelly Gregg, considerably bigger than Kelly Gregg, probably has more athletic talent than Kelly Gregg, and is able to be very effective denying space in the run and also making tackles himself. So I would say his bull rush is very effective when he keeps his pads low. And that's the old Calais Campbell. If you've seen him do that interview, he talks about, I can be a great player if I stay low. That's a lot of defensive linemen, but Jordan Phillips is one of the guys who really needs to stay low. He needs to not stand up. He needs to not allow double teams to stand him up. Phillips is more likely to be a guy who can hold up to double teams on early downs, I think, because he's not really actively trying to penetrate as much. And the two gap guys who aren't penetrators, the key thing is they set their feet properly. And if you ever go to camp, you can see them practicing this, but you work on setting each foot opposite to the defender at the angle they're coming. And you kind of set your foot almost perpendicular to the defender that's opposite that foot. So the defender is further from that foot. And it means you set your feet not quite at 90 degree angle to each other, but kind of close to that so that you can maintain your spot there. People who are penetrating, what will happen is they're still moving their feet, trying to get by someone. Then that double team comes, gets them up on one pin, makes it very easy for that second lineman to finish them in terms of the block. And already that guard or center is climbing to level two and making another block. So having a guy who's not a thoroughly unremorseless penetrator, like a lot of there are several in this draft who just they fit that bill, is good in the case of Phillips. So I think you know, he's got a wrestling background just like Kelly Gregg. That's a very good thing for a nose tackle, and I think he will have the size if they want him to add another 15 pounds or so to play nose tackle in the NFL. He won't even be a smallish nose at all. He's a local player, high productivity, and he's one of many options, but if they took him at number 91, I would not be upset. If they took him in the fourth round, I think it would be tremendous value.
Yeah. That all sounds really good to me. I have not seen him yet. So the source I have for tape didn't even have his name on there. There have been those situations, like I mentioned on Twitter or X earlier this week, when watching Georgia film, which I'm sure we'll get to one of these guys at least on your list. Ingram Dawkins is not also, he's not on the list of available tape for me, but he is declared for the NFL draft, and he had a pretty big combine, really good athletic tester. So, I mean, there may be a number of those situations, even though I went through, I don't know, probably 30 guys or so. Mm-hmm. I wrote down his name, and I will have to get to him before we get to draft day. So I'll have some of my own thoughts on him, but, everything that you says, you know, screams a good Ravens player in the late third.
All right, let's move on to number 9 for you.
Number 9 for me is Alfred Collins out of Texas. Let's see here. They had a number of players.
Yeah, two IDLs there.
Yeah, I liked Collins a little bit more. So, yeah, he was a strong player. Really nice frame. I didn't get his measurables up. I don't know if you have that.
I've got him.
Okay.
You want to hear him now?
Sure.
6'6", 332. This is the big thing. 34 5/8 inch arms. 495 other in terms of the 40. Very poor jumps. He will be 24 in October.
Okay. That's all good stuff. Yeah, I did not have that information, but just from watching him, I could tell he was a pretty good sized player. Good backside pursuit, run defense, a really nice pass rusher for his size as well. Likes to hit the quarterback. I thought he was aware when he wasn't getting to the quarterback to get his hands up. It's something that a lot of the Ravens defensive linemen have done a good job of in recent years. You know, if you think of Brent Urban, even Broderick Washington, Matt Ibike, I mean, all of these guys are taught to get their hands up if they aren't going to make it to the quarterback. So I thought he did a good job of that. It led to an interception for Texas in the Florida game from this past year against Georgia. And this is going to be a pretty common theme, and I'm not trying to toot my own horn as a Georgia fan. Some of these guys struggled a little bit in, you know, their success against the Bulldogs offensive line. And I think that's a number of things. Yep. Talent and coaching. So he didn't have the best game against Georgia, but he still, you know, stood out with multiple plays. I thought he did a good job stacking and shedding, you know, getting involved with gang tackles against the running backs. He had some pressures, you know, near Carson Beck's feet pretty early on in the game. Struggled at times against the run blocking from Georgia's unit, but he's willing to take on double teams. You know, I just thought he was a solid player. Did a nice looping rush early on in the game, or maybe it was later in the game. I didn't put the timestamps on it. Hands up play to deflect a pass right at the quarterback on the edge, on the offensive left sideline. That was one that I had. Good screenplay awareness. So the old Terrell Suggs special.
Yep.
Yeah, he was able to tackle Arian Smith after the screen, you know, reception, which is, you know, a super fast player. Obviously, Arian didn't get going yet, but good awareness, turning around, attacking. I like all these things about him. I feel like he fits, you know, with the size that he has. He can move along the defensive line and would be a good, you know, backup and rotational player for Baltimore. And then also I could see him as a, you know, a borderline starter down the road, kind of replacing that five tech that Brent Urban might be, you know, vacating, something that the Ravens don't use a ton, but he can kick into three. He can play some nose at that size, a little bit taller, but that's not a bad thing. And I think he has some juice as a pass rusher.
All right. Collins is my number seven guy. So I loved him. A whole bunch of things about him, but he's a nose tackle also. His length is excellent and he uses it to fairly good effect in terms of getting his hands on alignment and disrupting their plan for that. His stops to miss tackle rate this last year was one of the very best at 13.5-1. He's got a career missed tackle rate of 11.7%, which is, it's not particularly great for a lineman, but when you break it down, he had a 3% missed tackle rate in his fifth season here at Texas, and it was 18% his first 4 years. So that's fine. The most recent information is the most pertinent, and he's definitely turned his game around in some ways. 51% pass rush snaps career. Again, more of a run defender. He's a massive run-stuffing nose tackle at the NFL level, but he lined up all over for Texas. He lined up some on the edge and certainly some three and some five. I like his closing speed, I think, for a larger man, run or pass. And we saw him, running down run plays as well as pass plays. Kind of reminds you a little bit of Sam Adams. You don't want to go crazy because not everybody's going to be Sam Adams at the NFL level, but Sam Adams was immensely quick for a big man. A lot of it was in the first step, but he also had great closing speed. He could put on a burst to get to the quarterback, to get to a running back that really was remarkable. And Collins seems to have some of that as well. This last year had 27 stops and just two missed tackles. He's one of the best two gap defenders in the entire draft. It's 27 stops is good productivity from the nose. But what I'll say about this also is that his game, since he's two gapping most of the time and often accepting double teams a lot, is much more about denying space and creating opportunities for the men next to him. So he's not the guy who necessarily picks up a lot of tackle credit on this. And so those 27 stops are an under reflection of his stuffery on the opponent's run games. You mentioned the pass defense. He had seven of those at the line of scrimmage just in this last year. He has 12 career. That's a very high total, even in 5 years. Is outstanding. That is a large portion of his pass rush contribution. So he does, I think he gets more pressures than PFF would cite him for, as I would score them. And the reason I think he does is because he has a good bull rush that imperils the cone. And when you do that, particularly to the front of the pocket, that's extremely disruptive and annoying to the quarterback. And that causes a lot of plays to break down that get, again, made by somebody else. But that's his primary contribution is going to be making somebody else's job easier. For the Ravens, I think he'd immediately be an early down nose tackle who would pair with Williams or Madubuike or a new three tech if they get one, and preserve Travis Jones. So you're not playing Travis Jones all of a sudden 65 or 70% of snaps. Alfred Collins as a rookie, I think, would have a similar number to what Travis Jones had as a rookie. The Ravens may need to prepare for life after Travis Jones in 2026. So they need a player like Collins who could potentially step up and be part of a quality pass rush pairing. I think I'd be thrilled to have him at number 91. I think there's a good chance he won't last that long. And he's one of the guys I would take a shot on trading up for. So if they needed to trade up to number 80, they'd probably have to give up 91 and 129 to get him. That'll be costly for the Ravens, losing their top fourth round pick to do it. And yet I think it still might be the right call. He's a terrific player and would be a very nice one to have. And you're not going to be able to do it much cheaper than that, which tells me they probably have to wait later than 80 to draft him. And they might have to wait all the way to 91. And the Ravens have a very confident feel as they progress through the draft. So they may have six guys they like at 91. And another team is on the clock at 80, and they're not at all concerned about getting one of their guys come that 91st pick. So they won't trade up under that sort of a situation. But Collins would exactly meet their need.
Yeah, I agree with that.
All right, so he was my number seven guy. So we're moving on to my number nine guy, right?
Yes.
If you're looking for a better way to unwind, focus, or even get a good night's sleep, listen up. Let me tell you about Mood, the online cannabis company that's changing the game when it comes to functional gummies. They've crafted a whole line up of federally legal THC blends designed to help with everything from stress to sleep to mental clarity and even some spicier needs if you're into that. Now, what makes Mood different? They go beyond just THC. They pair it with herbs and adaptogens to create targeted effects that you won't find in any other dispensary. And every gummy is made with pesticide-free, small-farm American cannabis, so you're getting quality that you can trust. I've tried their sleep gummies, and let me tell you, about takes about 15 minutes, and I'm out cold, no grogginess, no weird side effects, getting some of the best sleep I've gotten in my life when I take one of these gummies. And if you need a mood boost, there are Epic Euphoria gummies, game changers. And right now, Mood is giving listeners 20% off their first order by using the promo code RAVENS at checkout. So head on over to mood.com, find the perfect gummy for whatever life throws your way, and don't forget to use the promo code RAVENS to save 20%.
Close your eyes and imagine what you'll look like 6 months from now. How's your hair look? The same? Now picture how your hair would look if you started using Hims. If you're picturing the same you as before, but with much thicker and fuller hair, you'd be correct. What can happen in 3 to 6 months? You could pick up a new hobby and get not that good at it yet. You could do about half of your New Year's resolution. You could learn a few songs on the piano or pick up bass guitar. Or you could start seeing thicker, fuller hair regrowth through Hims. Not bad for just 3 to 6 months. Men, if you're starting to notice your hair thinning when you look in the mirror, you're not alone. Life just gets busier and busier, and it can feel like there's not enough time in the day to do something about it. So, try Hims Hair Loss Solutions. You can avoid jumping through a bunch of frustrating hoops and get access to treatment without even leaving your home. Hims provides you with the convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, and they can help you get your confidence back too with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary based on studies on topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
What makes for a great vacation? Depends on who you ask. Are you looking to get away? Or bring everyone together? Do you want to get outside and play? Or see a play at the plate? Fortunately, however you operate, I'm the destination you've been looking for. The name's Missouri, but you can call me Mo. And I have just one question. What's your MO? Come see me at visitmo.com.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365 because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply.
So my number nine guy is his line mate, Vernon Broughton of Texas. Now, he's much more of a pocket morphing 3/5 type pass rush specialist. So I've got him at number nine here. He's 6'4", 305. I don't have arm length for him, which is really weird because I usually get a full set of measurements. 490, it's an other, so it's a kind of a jaundiced eye question about what his true speed is like. He played 5 years at Texas also, so did Collins. His stops to missed tackle ratio is just okay at 4.3, 4.5 career, 4.3 this last year. Career missed tackle rate is 14.3%. And he's been much more of a pass rush specialist with 57% of his career snaps coming as a pass rusher. So that's significantly different than Collins, for example, who's playing a lot more of the early downs. What I liked about him is he played a lot of his best football in the college football playoff. He had a great game against Arizona State. And even in the loss to Ohio State, he was right there playing pretty well. I think if you look individually at those games, you see lots of walk back reps where he's bullying, and he has a very good ability to bull then shed. Some two gap players in particular, a lot of nose tackles, sometimes even a three tech playing right up on top of a guard, they become so enamored with the pass rush, they don't try and shed at the end of it. And they push you into the quarterback, but they almost don't know what to do next. He's a bull then shed guy. So he's looking to push that guy to kind of like just one side of the quarterback, then get off and make his play. Same thing with a running back in the backfield when he does that. He's got an arm over move that is kind of his go-to half man move. Didn't see the spin move in his case. It's not a deep toolkit necessarily, but he's good at what he does. There is evidence that he can be locked out on run plays. He's not as effective there. This may be an arm length concern, and I want to go back and see him play against some longer armed interior defenders, which there aren't tons of, by the way. The good guards in this draft, and the Georgia guys in particular, all three of them are on the list for the interior offensive line. Nobody's particularly long. I mean, you know, even the tackles that are moving inside are just more length problems. Meanwhile, this defensive interior group, incredible number of long arm players. So not having Broughton's measurements there is kind of a bummer. For the Ravens, I think he'd be part of an early down 1-3 pairing with a new nose. So he would probably be taking Urban's spot on the team. He would be, I assume Washington is going to stay with the team. That's also actually up in the air. If they got enough defensive linemen, they might decide they don't need Washington. But assuming they go with that, I think he's a three tech who plays with a new nose tackle, and he probably gets a pretty good opportunity this year. You don't want it to become a very good opportunity where he's trial by fire, where either Williams or Madubika goes down. But you know, if he could play 25% of the snaps, I think that'd be good. If Urban is off the team, then he might be a guy who takes some five tech snaps as well, or moves Williams out there because Williams has some experience taking five tech snaps. Also, so that would seem to make sense to me. He's with Madubike present, he's not set up for a lot of juicy one-on-one opportunities versus guards as a high leverage three tech. I still think he'd be a plus value at 91 and an outstanding value if he somehow lasts till round four. But I don't want there to be any question about this. I'm taking Collins all the way over Broughton if both are available at 91 and there's not some other player that I like.
Oh, for sure. He was an honorable mention for me, number 12 overall. So really close to being in that top 10 list. I didn't see some of those games that you were watching for his specific tape. So I think there might be a little bit of a difference in what I saw from him, but I definitely was able to identify, you know, his pass rush ability. I did see him, you know, get double teamed a lot. He didn't necessarily win in many of those instances, but that did open up things for players around him, and that's always a positive. I thought he had a nice pass rush against Georgia on a screen rollout play, ended up incomplete. Active hands. I thought he always, you know, very active hands. And looks for work. So I thought that was really positive for him too. And like I mentioned earlier, pass deflections are going to be key on our defensive line. And he also brought some of that to his game. That was really solid. So I liked him. He just wasn't quite in the top 10 for me. But there's going to be a number of other pass rushing defensive linemen that I like maybe a little bit more than you just based on our list so far.
It's certainly packed with talent, this defensive line group. Let's move on to your number eight guy.
My number eight is Tyleek Williams out of Ohio State. I was watching him and a teammate, Hamilton, I believe. Tyleek Williams. Yeah, Ty Hamilton was his teammate. He was an honorable mention for me, but Tyleek Williams, good size. A stack and shed tackle for loss player. Really good run defense. Attacks the ball. I thought he was, you know, strong as a downhill pass rusher. Honestly, his teammate and him were a really good duo. If you could somehow get both of those guys in the draft, you know, at the appropriate spots, I mean, I'd be fine with that too. I thought, you know, what he was able to do with Jack Sawyer in the Iowa game, I think it was closer to the end. They teamed up for a forced fumble and got a recovery, which was a huge play in the game. Obviously, Ohio State is kind of a class above Iowa, but, you know, those are rivalry games. I mean, anytime that you're talking about, you know, Big Ten against Big Ten, you know, those two programs. So I thought he played well in that one. The Oregon game, at Oregon, he had, you know, plenty of power in his bull rush. I thought, you know, do you have his frame? I just was
watching. Yeah, 6'3", 334, and 32-inch arms, though.
Okay. Is it 6'3 flat, or is there anything on top of it?
Oh, I don't know. It's 6'3", okay. Is what I rounded everybody to the inch. Okay. I took the NFL draft buzz number specifically.
Okay. I was guessing off tape around 6'4", but 6'3 is not bad. It's pretty common, actually, from what I was seeing from some of these guys, that height. And I felt like from his frame as well, what I was looking for in a lot of these guys is enough weight in their lower half. You know, just from the optics and the way he was playing, I felt like he, you know, he had enough sand in the pants. And that's always a positive thing, especially when you're trying to add some, you know, two gapping run defense type defensive tackles to the team. So I was pleased with him. And yeah, I don't have much more to say, actually.
All right. I loved him. He's number four on my list. Well, let's go through some of the other stuff. He's been on a list. This the freak list that comes out every year, and I'm forgetting who, Feldman or somebody.
I think it's Brugler.
No, I don't think it's Brugler. Well, maybe he has his own, but there's the top 50 freaks. Anyway, it doesn't matter whose freak list he's on. He supposedly ran a 4.68 40, weighing 6'3", 334 pounds. Okay, what? So that is absolutely freaky. He'll only be he was 22 in February, so he's one of the younger defensive linemen in the draft. Don't have any other testing on him, which is unfortunate. The 40 time, boy, I would love to have seen that at you know, tested up, you know, appropriately at the combine, but it wasn't. His stops to missed tackle ratio is something that is not great. Career 3.3 to 1 last year, 4.5 career, which is okay. And a career 12% missed tackle rate, which is a little high for an interior defender. He's played 55% of his pass rush snaps as a pass rusher. That's high for an interior defensive lineman. So he's more of a guy they want to have in on passing downs. Definitely has a very fine bull rush, has quickness for the run game. Definitely needs to be a better hand fighter, and that comes with 32-inch arms. When your arms are that short, most even of the interior offensive linemen, even some of the short-armed ones, are going to be able to dictate first contact with you. So you have to come up with ways to overcome that. And active hands are a good way to start. What I noticed is really freaky. First of all, he has almost like a barrel-shaped body. About him, it does not look unathletic at all. Just a barrel-shaped body, but he'll does a great job as an under on stunts. So what that does is you dive between two players. You actually usually cross the face of a guard, hit the center is the most common way, and then it can be the tackle. Also, you're doing that too. But when you do that, you effectively cause both the guard and center to get a half man block on you. And it effectively sets up a half man pass rush move for you as soon as your looper comes around and peels off the near defender to his looping gap. All right. So Williams was just outstanding, basically converting that speed to power. Once he had a half man situation, you think about any edge rusher, you know, when they get the proper bend, you know, it's the ability to turn basically good leverage on the edge to not compromise your path to the quarterback and make it too circuitous, or to make you allow you to be blocked 12 to 6 easily. And Williams really had that in spades. For an interior defender, you don't always see that. He plays one shoulder of that offensive lineman very, very well. His pressure rate is frankly a little low for his gifts. He did have 11 and a half sacks and 10 passes defense, though, in 51 college games. That alone is pretty good pressure contribution. He had a lot more pressures in addition to that. There's talk about, you know, he's a guy you can line up anywhere from 0 to 7. Again, we had this come up on a couple of the different shows. This versatility angle is for the birds in terms of you know, a defensive lineman. A team will draft him, they'll put him in a place, and it will probably be tremendously to his benefit to learn how to play that position exceptionally well. And I think Williams, as a nose tackle for the Ravens, could easily become the next guy that people love as a guy who gets push on the pocket, morphs the pocket, creates opportunities, maybe like Haloti Ngata if you want to go to the extreme case, or like a Michael Pierce, if you want to go to a also very good case who's not that extreme, a guy who creates a lot of pressure by himself that somebody else ends up cleaning up on. All that's fine. I think he's potentially an enormous addition for the Baltimore Ravens. And I think we'll talk about where they're going to get him in a minute. But if he got to the Ravens, I think they immediately plug him in as a nose on early downs. And he's put the potential Travis Jones replacement if they can't get him signed for next year. And it may even help them decide how to spend their money. If Tyleek Williams ends up having a breakout rookie season, he may be a guy that you say, you know what, we really want to sign Travis Jones, but he's expensive and Tyleek Williams is not. And it might make sense to do that. Here's the problem. I really expect him to go in the second round, somewhere between the 27th and 59th pick, where the Ravens have their two goalposts. I think it's going to go right through the uprights, unfortunately. So the Ravens won't get him unless they trade back or they trade up. I don't really see them doing either of those things. They may trade back is the more likely of the two. If they did, they could potentially get him where he'd be of value, 40, 45, you know, 50 for certain, he'd be a lot of value. If he gets to 59, I mean, they're going to take him. I unless, you know, Xavier Watts or somebody is on the board at the same time, then they're going to think about it and they might take him anyway. Mm-hmm. But he's a very intriguing prospect to me, and a guy I have no problem with the Ravens taking, certainly 59 or a little higher.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. As we were talking about this talented defensive line, for me, everybody that I ranked number 8 and up was already a second rounder or higher. It's just a crazy defensive line group, you know, especially when you're comparing it to some previous years. It's just like there wasn't this level of talent or this pool of players. And right now, I mean, it's going to be really good. There's going to be a trickle down effect, as you're talking about, you know, pre-show and, you know, early on with the UDFAs as well. There's going to be some talented players that slip through the cracks
and don't get drafted at all. You know, a lot has been made about the Ravens having all these shitty picks at the end of the draft in 6 and 7. I look at this as a draft where, boy, they're going to have some opportunities to not have to play the UDFA Derby and have, you know, two priority guys or even one priority guy gets most of their money. Because the UDFA pool, by the way, for those who don't know, is limited. I don't know what it is, maybe $150,000 or something. You get to sign like 20 guys with that money. So you got to be, oftentimes, one guy will want $100,000 of that to sign. And so you have to be real careful how you hand that out. And the Ravens have an unbelievable process where they have literally like 20 guys, scouts and agents and people, and coaches who have worked with this player or scouted this player and have the closest relationship, kind of like a billing partner or something, that they are on the phone with them talking about money as soon as the draft is over. And they're very good at it, but they still have limited resources. Well, additional 7th-round picks and 6th-round picks mean you could take some of these guys and not allocate any of your UDFA pool to that. And it's not like a 6th or 7th-round pick is so much draft capital. They have to be worried about wasting it. I think a lot of these guys, you know, on the defensive line in particular, would be great choices to do it. And I wouldn't mind if they went multiple 7s there. You look at who they used their 7s on last year. I think it was Nick Samak and Sanusi Kane, right?
Mm-hmm.
So those aren't tremendously exciting 7th-round picks. They could do a lot better with a particular defensive lineman this year. We got some good guys in the honorable mention who really might fit that category.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, that was your number eight guy, was it?
Yes, my number eight and your number four. Is that right?
My number four. There you go. So we'll jump in. My number eight guy is TJ Sanders of South Carolina. And let me go down to him because I have a feeling, if I recall correctly, that he was more of a pass rush guy.
I would say he is.
Yeah. 6'4", 297, so a little small. He's a three tech all the way, 33 and an eighth inch arms, 495. Another outstanding jump. So he'll be 22 in July. So that's good. That's young for the defensive line. Played 4 years at South Carolina. If you look at his testing, it's average or plus across the board. So he's one of the better IDL athletes. There aren't a lot of guys who were like great in a lot of categories. A lot of them didn't test other than a decent 40, say. So it's really a lot of conservatism, but the TJ Sanders is a guy who had plus testing across the board. His stops to miss tackles are just okay. 4.0 last year is not really good. 5.2 career is much better. Career 9.9% missed tackle rate is okay. He played 54% pass rush snaps in his career. He has a very polished set of half man pass rush moves. And I'd say if you look at the trajectory, he's played a lot better these last couple of years than he did early in his career, but he does still struggle against the run. So, meaning he's played better as a pass rusher, and he still struggles against the run. Here's my basic problem with Sanders. He's the only reason why I dropped to as low as eight on my list, or eight it is that he's always looking to penetrate. And if you want a guy, if you want to look at two different guys, Alfred Collins is a guy who sets his feet very well. TJ Sanders is a guy who's constantly motoring to penetrate. And he gets washed out a lot because he gets up on one pin from the double team initially, and that makes the trailing lineman able to finish that block much more easily. Sometimes the double teaming lineman, the climber, actually finishes it even before he can he bothers to climb. But anyway, he's a guy who will have some trouble in the NFL if he doesn't get better coaching on that, even if he ends up at three tech, because some NFL run schemes now, you're really trying to double team that three tech as well. So it's it would be a thing he's going to need to get better at. Now here's the thing, and this is the guy I noticed an unbelievable toolkit. I'm just going to run through this very quickly, and you're going to hear a lot of different things, but this is watching him get pressure during the year. The moves I observed versus Kentucky, he had a swim move. He had a fast backup with a bull move versus LSU. That's just, you're going to hear that a lot. He had an under on a stunt where both Missouri offensive linemen gave up on him. That's just a dream for a guy who's crossing a face of a guard. He had a slap move to win outside versus Missouri. He leapt when not engaged by either the Clemson left guard or left tackle. So they were both kind of being careful to leave him on the edge of the pocket, but they weren't careful enough to punch him in the stomach and stop him from getting his hands up, which is terrific that that happened. He looped through the right C gap to contain the QB on what became a sack. He had a rip move versus Oklahoma for a fast sack. He had a lateral shed of the Texas A&M left guard who expected help from the center, didn't get it. He had an arm over versus Texas A&M for a pressure. He had a speed to power versus Texas A&M left guard for pressure. He crossed the face of the left guard and beat half man blocks from both the left guard and center with power versus Texas A&M, and he crossed the face of the guard and center to beat the center to the right side. That's the far side of effectively going around two men for a pressure versus Ole Miss. Just an unbelievable set of different ways, a toolkit that he has. Chuck Smith will love working with this guy because even though he's advanced, he's clearly very coachable. He learned all this stuff. It's going to be really fun to see him. So he's a guy. Would definitely be a guy who would be a little bit blocked by what Matabike does, but he could use some of his toolkit on the early downs. Not going to play nose tackle for you. He's too small for that, but he could play three tech. He could probably play some five tech for you. And the Ravens don't play a lot of base defense. They play very little total five tech snaps in a typical year. If they were behind in a game, they would want to do it, but the other team would also be likely to be running the ball more, and a player like Sanders wouldn't be as useful. So I think he's a three tech only, and I think early three tech only, early down three tech only for the Ravens. But it may be if Matabike is hurt at some point that he would be a guy who gets a bigger role. And I think he's a good guy to have as an insurance policy for that. So I would be okay, by the way, if they got him at 59, where he'd be a consideration. But that might be in round three as well, that that they could get him. So Sanders is a guy who sneaks into the end of the second round. He's a par pick at 59. He's not a big value there, but he'd be a par pick.
Yeah. We finally about met up on value here. I have him as my number seven player. He was your number eight. Honestly, I was really close between switching him and Tyreek Williams, my eight and number seven. So I really liked him a lot. You talked about a number of those things. You know, I saw powerful, explosive, heavy hands out of him, good lateral agility, tons of pass rush moves, like you talked about, you know, getting into the more specifics of play-by-play, but, you know, dip move, swim move, hand swipes. You know, he just was one heck of a pass rusher at South Carolina. And I think they have a pretty good tradition over there of creating defensive linemen and some edge rushers, but maybe even more so interior defensive linemen that are talented rushers. And I have tons of positive notes on him from the LSU game and from the Missouri game. He's just a really exciting player, and I agree with you on the value. I think he is going to go in the second round. I imagine a player like him is going to get more buzz as we get closer to the draft.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the size limitations are there, certainly for teams that are wanting a nose tackle, because he's not that. But, you know, he's a strong player, a good pass rusher, and that's kind of a premium in the NFL. I mean, some people are starting to catch on to defensive line. Go ahead.
Yeah. My question I was just going to ask you is that, are the Ravens at a disadvantage in terms of that? They have Madubuike, and in terms of actually landing a player like Sanders, is there going to be too much love from him for other teams that need an interior pass rusher? Because it seems like there definitely are not enough good three-tech pass rushers to go around the league. The Ravens have one. They'd be loath to spend a lot of additional draft capital, I think, on getting another one, whereas another team that doesn't have a Madubuike right now would love to get a Madubuike anytime they could.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I do think that this particular draft class is loaded with them, though, so that even though other teams are going to be, you know, more locked into getting this particular archetype of a defensive lineman, the Ravens have the benefit of there being, you know, a huge supply of them. Supply and demand economics are always at play in the NFL, and and I think, you know, we'll see that.
Yeah, that's a very good point. All right, I think that takes us to the end of the first show. We're going to save our honorable mentions, even though we've probably already given a couple of them away in players that were, you know, on one list but not the other. But we've gone down through number seven. We'll do six through one in the second show. Great discussion, Jake. Tell folks where they can talk football with you online.
Yeah, I am on Twitter, or X as they call it, at Real Jake Vogel, V-O-G-E-L. I'm always talking Ravens football, Georgia football, and anything in between for college and NFL.
All right. Baseball fan at all? Orioles fan?
Yes. Yes. Okay. I mean, I've been kind of in the tape recently, so I haven't had too much time for baseball. But, yeah, I like the O's.
Yeah, I'm in the same position. This time of year, it's just you got to manage your sleep schedule. You got to get up and you got to work on the draft stuff, or I won't get through it all. It's just anyway. Really appreciate having you on. Other folks out there, want to plug the draft watch party. Jake will be on at least for part of it. Looking forward to that. And join us for all 3 days if you can. It is the best way to watch the NFL draft with a bunch of like-minded Ravens fans who don't give a crap about commercials. They don't give a crap about, in fact, they're just annoyed by commercials, frankly. They don't give a crap about the human interest stories that go with the draft for the most part, unless it affects play on the field somehow. They just care about how does this draft affect the Baltimore Ravens and potentially also the rest of the division that competes with the Baltimore Ravens. So we're looking to do that. We have a great group mechanic for all making suggestions, kind of putting your calls in. So if you want to be able to stream, that's great. And if you have interest in being a panelist, hit me up with a DM and I can probably fit you in, particularly if you want to come on day three when the Ravens have 8 selections to make. So that'd be a lot of fun. Jake, thanks again for joining me.
Yeah, thank you, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here, reminding you that a lot of life's firsts are better with help from American Family Insurance. Like your first home expansion or your first big lightning strike. There's a first for everything. Get the right home policy at the right price with the right help from American Family's agents. Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.